Hello, all you freedom-loving people. Welcome to another episode of Front Page. I'm your host, Scott Cameron Goulet. President Trump appeared on CNN TV for the first time in years while CNN is trying to save its declining ratings. So what questions did CNN ask President Trump and how did President Trump answer them? With government funds about to run out and with a Republican Party demanding spending cuts, is Biden possibly going to use Article 14 of the Constitution to solve the crisis? With inflation, seniors living on pensions are suffering more than other groups. This is because the items that they need are the ones that have increased in price the most. Although Democratic candidate RFK Jr. is also a conservative and he has similar philosophies to Republican conservatives on certain issues, he denied that he would form a partnership with President Trump because the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are different in their views on many other topics. In the midst of a huge controversy, NIH officials recently reinstated a suspended grant to EcoHealth Alliance. Okay, let's get into it. President Trump attended a CNN town hall in New Hampshire on Wednesday to begin his first media event for the 2024 presidential election. New Hampshire was the site of the nation's first Republican primary, and it is home to many swing voters. President Trump easily won New Hampshire's party primaries in 2016 and 2020, but he apparently lost the state in both general elections. This is the first time since the 2016 election that President Trump has appeared on CNN. Here's what he said. CNN anchor Caitlin Collins asked President Trump a series of controversial questions, including his views on the outcome of the 2020 election, his comments on women, and the legal issues he faces. President Trump's answers drew laughter and applause from the audience. When it comes to the 2020 presidential election, President Trump said that the United States needs to have an honest election.
I think that when you look at that result and when you look at what happened during that election, unless you're a very stupid person, you see what happens. A lot of the people in this audience, and maybe a couple that don't, but most people understand what happened.
What is an honest election? He said, for example, that voters need to carry their ID cards to vote.
We should have voter ID. We should have one-day elections. We should have paper ballots instead of these mail-in votes.
The January 6th congressional event was another big topic. Did President Trump encourage rallyists to storm Congress? President Trump pulled a few pieces of paper out. The papers contained his tweets from January 6th. He read out some of the tweets on the spot.
Breaking into the Capitol, smashing windows, injuring police officers. Why did it take you 3 hours to tell them to go home?
I don't believe it did. Oh, let me pull it out. I have to pull it out. So if you look at on January 5th, the day before, I said, please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful. Stay peaceful. This was the day before, and this was in the form of Twitter. Now I use Truth, Truth Social. I think it's far superior, okay? I hope everybody's on Truth. If you look, January 6th, just at 2, before 2:30, I am asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful. This is right after as it was happening. But what happened is they took it down. I don't know why. I think they took it down because it was so good. They didn't like it being up there.
The moderator again asked President Trump why he called on the protesters to retreat only after hours his supporters stormed the Capitol. President Trump read out part of his speech from January 6th, where he clearly told those in attendance, close to a million people listening to his three-hour speech, he told them to be peaceful and to go home. President Trump also replied because that was Nancy Pelosi's job.
Why did you wait 3 hours to tell them to leave the Capitol? They listen to you like no one else. You know that.
They do. I agree with that.
But so why
Nancy
didn't you
Pelosi,
tell them to go home sooner?
Nancy Pelosi and the mayor are in charge. I assume they were able to do their job. They weren't.
When an audience member asked if President Trump would pardon the protesters who were charged with crimes as a result of the January 6th incident, President Trump replied that yes, he would pardon most of them.
Pardon the January 6th rioters who were convicted of federal offenses.
I am inclined to pardon many of them. I can't say for every single one because a couple of them probably they got out of control. But, you know, when you look at Antifa, what they've done to Portland, and if you look at Antifa, look at what they've done to Minneapolis and so many other so many other places. Look at what they did to Seattle and BLM. BLM. Many people were killed. These people, I'm not trying to justify anything, but you have two standards of justice in this country, and what they've done, and I love that question, because what they've done to so many people is nothing, nothing. And then what they've done to these people, they've persecuted these people. And yeah, my answer is, I am most likely, if I get in, I will most likely, I would say it will be a large portion of them. You know, they did a very... And it'll be very early on. And they're living in hell right now.
So when it comes
they're
to
living
pardons...
in hell, and they're policemen, and they're firemen, and they're soldiers, and they're carpenters and electricians, and they're great people. Many of them are just great people.
President Trump's policy on inflation is very simple, but very effective.
Including mine. If elected president again, what is the first thing you would do to help bring down the cost to make things more affordable?
Drill, baby, drill.
When the price of gasoline and energy comes down, the cost of all goods goes down, and with it, the price. On the question of whether guns should be banned, given the current wave of shooting tragedies, President Trump believes that Second Amendment rights are very important. The problem is with people, not with guns.
We have a very big mental health problem in this country. And again, it's not the gun that pulls the trigger. It's the person that pulls the trigger. And we have to protect our Second Amendment. We have to protect our Second Amendment.
He said that when elected, he would do a lot to address mass shootings, including hiring more security personnel for schools. And he plans to beef up security measures at institutional entrances. In response to the grand jury's decision in the E. Jean Carroll circus, President Trump denied all the charges. He said that he never met the woman.
And I swear on my children, which I'd never do, I have no idea who this woman. This is a fake story, made up story. We had a horrible Clinton-appointed judge. He was horrible. He allowed her to put everything in. He allowed us to put nothing in.
Mr. President, this is a you're fake recounting your version.
Biden did not appear to be paying attention to President Trump's town hall meeting on his way back to Washington last night. The White House press that was traveling with Biden reported that the TV on Air Force One was switched to CNN on the flight to New York. But the TV was switched to MSNBC on the return flight as Trump's town hall began. On the debt ceiling impasse and the way forward, President Trump said at the CNN town hall meeting that his advice to Republicans is that if the Democrats don't cut spending significantly, then they will have to default. But he also said that he believes that the U.S. debt will not end up in default because the Democrats will definitely cave. No one wants a debt default like this to happen. He said that the current government spends money like a drunken sailor. Biden told reporters on Tuesday that he is considering invoking a constitutional provision on the validity of the debt to break the deadlock on the debt ceiling issue, Biden said after the meeting on the debt limit with congressional leaders. I have been considering the 14th Amendment. Fox News Digital reported that several legal experts expressed doubts about the feasibility of the move. They explained that the current situation does not quite match the situation when the legislation was enacted. The 14th Amendment reads the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. Thomas Lee, a professor of constitutional law at Fordham University, told Fox News Digital, I wouldn't call it crazy because, you know, it's plausible based on the reading of the text. But given the context, I just don't think it's the best reading of it. Lee added, he can't borrow money to pay the debt. Congress has the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States under Article 1, Section 8. Ellen Werman, an associate professor of law at Arizona State University, argues that the 14th Amendment is not intended to deal with debts that occur in the future. Werman said, the plain reading of Section 4 is that it has absolutely nothing to do with the debt limit. Existing debts cannot be questioned, but raising the debt ceiling is for the purpose of creating new debts. Nothing in Section 4 says Congress must create new debt to service older debt. Carrie Severino, the head of the Judicial Crisis Network, slammed Biden for his consideration. Severino told Fox News Digital, it's telling that the Biden administration is willing to consider far-fetched constitutional theories that even Janet Yellen won't embrace, rather than engaging in the real legislative work of dialogue and compromise. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told ABC News that invoking the amendment would lead to a constitutional crisis. Thomas Lee predicts that the Supreme Court may deny a role in the case altogether if it faces a court challenge from House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. According to a new study by the Senior Citizens League, which is a nonprofit seniors advocacy group, the purchasing power of Social Security benefits has been eroded by more than a third since the year 2000 due to inflationary factors. For retiree families who took $100 to the supermarket in the year 2000, the purchasing power is now equivalent to about $64. But some households have not felt the decline in their purchasing power of money so dramatically. So is it possible that this organization's findings are overstated? The Senior Citizens League pointed out that according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, many seniors' daily necessities have increased in price faster than the rate of inflation. For example, in the past year, ending in February, the price of eggs rose by 110%, while the cost of bread rose 18% and dental care increased 16%. Electricity and car maintenance costs rose by about 13% during this period. The amount of Social Security benefits varies with the cost of living adjustment. As inflation has risen in recent years, the cost of living adjustment for Social Security benefits has increased the most since the early 1980s by 5.9% in 2022 and by a further 8.7% in 2023. However, the rate of adjustment has not kept pace with the price increases. In the long run, the cost of living adjustment for Social Security benefits increased by about 78% between January of 2000 and February of 2023, but the price of goods and services used by retirees increased by more than 141% over the same period. The financial pressure has increased for those who are living on a fixed income from their Social Security checks. Democratic candidate Robert Kennedy Jr. denied all speculation, and he made it clear on Wednesday that he would not, in any case, join President Trump on a 2024 election ticket. Kennedy Jr. tweeted, "Just to quell any speculation, under no circumstances will I join Donald Trump on an electoral ticket." He added, "Our positions on certain fundamental issues, our approaches to governance, and our philosophies of leadership could not be further apart." Kennedy's statement comes one day after a Rasmussen's Report survey. The survey found that Robert Kennedy Jr. has a favorable rating with both Democrats and Republicans, as well as with independent voters. In the survey, Democrats still view Biden as the most suitable choice over Kennedy and Marianne Williamson. However, those surveyed said that they are likely to split between a Biden-Harris ticket and a Trump-Kennedy ticket. A bit surprisingly, according to the survey, 44% of likely voters would vote for both candidates in a Biden and Kamala Harris race. If such a matchup took place, Trump-Kennedy would get 72% of Republicans, 20% of Democrats, and 41% of independent voters, whereas apparently 72% of Democrats, 14% of Republicans, and 44% of independent voters would still choose Biden-Harris again. The survey comes as Robert Kennedy Jr. appears to be promoting an anti-establishment agenda. He dismisses some of the narratives that more radical Democrats promote. For example, Robert Kennedy Jr. argued last week that one could be pro-immigration and pro-closing the border. Robert Kennedy Jr. tweeted, "America should be a haven of freedom and prosperity, open to law-abiding migrants who will contribute to our society. However, immigration must proceed in an orderly, lawful manner. Right now, we have chaos at the border, human trafficking, criminality, intolerable stress on border states like Texas. It's a humanitarian nightmare." Also, Robert Kennedy Jr. has spoken out against censorship in the U.S., describing it as a direct assault on our democracy. National Institute of Health officials recently restored a suspended $576,000 grant to EcoHealth Alliance. The grant is to study how outbreaks of viruses like SARS, MERS, and COVID-19 originate from wildlife and spread to humans. EcoHealth is a group from which the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, under then-director Anthony Fauci, funneled federal grant money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And now, reactivating the grant comes after recent emails that were released under the Freedom of Information Act reveal the sharp contrast between top NIH officials' public and private views on the origins of COVID-19. The new Freedom of Information email batch shows a pattern of deception at the NIH's highest echelon. This includes the former NIH director Francis Collins and its current director Lawrence Tabak, who was previously Collins' deputy. The emails also show that when President Trump cut funding for the EcoHealth Alliance, a number of organizations and individuals petitioned the NIH to keep the money flowing to EcoHealth. Those efforts ignored information about EcoHealth's work with the controversial lab and instead focused on animosity towards President Trump. Emails also reveal that after President Trump canceled EcoHealth's Wuhan grant, Collins and Tabak discussed ways to reinstate the grant. Perhaps the most significant revelation from the new FOIA emails is that the situation surrounding EcoHealth and its connection to Wuhan was causing NIH leaders a far bigger headache than they had indicated publicly. It was also crucial, but unknown to the public then, that EcoHealth had failed to submit two vital progress reports to the NIH. The reports were about EcoHealth's work at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Those reports covered the 2018 to 2019 timeframe in which COVID-19 might have been created at the lab. EcoHealth only provided these reports in 2020. Which is more than 2 years after the 2018 report should have been filed. This was only after FOIA requests for the report were filed. In September of 2021, the NIH finally released the report in response to FOIA claims. The 2018 report revealed that the Wuhan Institute of Virology had genetically engineered SARS viruses with novel spike proteins. This significantly increased the viral load in humanized mice compared to unaltered viruses. COVID-19 also featured a novel spike protein. EcoHealth later blamed technical difficulties for failing to submit the 2018 and 2019 reports. EcoHealth's narrative is questioned by the fact that the late filed 2018 report contained citations from 2019 and 2020. These citations did not exist when EcoHealth allegedly tried to submit the report. The FOIA emails also provide insight into the massive campaign that was undertaken by outside parties to reinstate EcoHealth's grant. Immediately after President Trump canceled EcoHealth's grant on April 24, 2020, due to the close connection between EcoHealth and the Wuhan Institute of Virology, a large number of parties, including individuals and organizations, petitioned the NIH to reinstate the grant. The main point of most petitions was that President Trump unfairly terminated EcoHealth's grant because he believed in the conspiracy theory that COVID-19 came out of a Wuhan lab. According to the emails, no matter how the mass petitioning happened, NIH leadership quickly gathered to brainstorm ways to restore EcoHealth's grant. And now, years after those emails, NIH officials have restored the suspended grant to EcoHealth. And that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you so much for your support of Front Page. Please remember that every like, comment, and share helps more people to see the truth. If you haven't already, please subscribe. And if you have already subscribed, we thank you, but please double check to make sure that you are still subscribed because some of our audience have reported that they're somehow unsubscribed without their knowledge. Okay, this is our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like what you heard today, please don't forget to like this video and share it with your friends and family because everybody deserves to know the truth. Again, thank you for watching Front Page, and we will see you next time.